We went to a seminar by Josh McDowell right when he came out with the book, Right Versus Wrong. And because we knew at the end of the day, our goal is not for our kids to follow rules. Mm. And our goal isn't even just for our kids to live wisely. Our goal is for our kids to know and love God. And so he laid out this concept of, as you disciple your kids, don't settle for precepts. And precepts are those specific rules. Thou shalt not lie. And he says, don't even just settle for principles, which go beyond their broader, honesty is the best policy. You wouldn't want someone to do that to you. But connect the behavior we expect for them to the character of God. We don't lie, not just because the Ten Commandments say thou shalt not lie. We don't lie because God is honest, because God would never lie to us, because we can count on what he says to be true. So, and all those behavior things, we tried to find the connecting point with the character of God, because he was the ultimate goal in this.
Welcome to Church 307, Wyoming's online church. Thank you for joining us today. This is a great episode coming at you hot through the servers of the Wild Wild Web. Grant, hit it.
Yep, send it.
That was kind of a boring intro, but today is a good talk.
And Wild Wild Web, is that?
I was thinking like Wild Wild Web. Okay, that's something like that.
Is that like the Will Smith movie?
That also popped in my head where I already said that. That's kind of like the Wild Wild West, Jim West, Desperado.
That's what it is.
If you're here to not hear us do Will Smith rap alongs, good. Then you chose the right time to be here. It's Monday, fun day. Please hit the like button right now. Share this, get it out there, and subscribe to the channel so that more Will Smith songs with some Christian content can be sent your way. Mike.
Some people modernize like old hymns and make them into new worship songs. We modernize old Will Smith songs.
I want to be the Weird Al Yankovic of worship music.
That's what you need to be.
Yeah. Could be good.
Hey, we are here today to talk about parenting. And so if you have any interest in learning how to be a parent or figuring out what you did wrong when you were a parent, whatever, we're going to talk about parenting today. And we have a very special guest with us. Dan Zebarth is in Mitchell, South Dakota. Thanks for joining us, Dan.
I'm so glad to be here.
You are the pastor of River Tree Church, previously Mitchell Wesleyan Church there, right?
That is correct.
And if people want to check you out and see what you're doing there in Mitchell, they go to wearerivertree.com.
Yes.
Yeah.
How'd you guys choose River Tree?
Yeah.
I'm always curious how churches get their names.
Sure. Yeah. Our name flows out of both Psalm 1 and Jeremiah 17. Where it gives this picture of a righteous person and how their life flourishes. And they're like that tree planted by streams of water. And we were drawn to that. So,
yep, that works.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. I assumed it was like the name of a neighborhood there.
Honestly, I thought you guys had that was a really deep explanation. I thought you were going to say, well, there's a creek that runs past.
Yeah. Your answer was better than we were.
Yeah. Wow.
So Dan, I brought you on today and asked you if you'd talk to us about parenting, because I watched a sermon that you preached last year sometime. I actually don't know when it was, but you preached a sermon about parenting, and in it you used Deuteronomy 6:7 in a unique way that I have not heard before. And so I'm wondering if maybe you can open up the conversation to talk about how you used that verse in your parenting strategy.
Absolutely. Yeah. Michelle and I were just beginning our parenting journey, but we had a sense of urgency because while we grew up both going to church, neither of us were really engaged spiritually by our parents at home. And we wanted to do that with our kids. Our goal is to see our kids grow in spiritual maturity beyond what we have, because hopefully they have an even stronger foundation than what we have. But we didn't really know quite where to start. But then our pastor pointed us towards this passage, Deuteronomy 6:7, and it just blew me away how intensely practical it is. And it just gave us very good starting points. We don't have to know everything, but it gave us the starting point we needed.
That's awesome. The passage says, repeat them again and again to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are on the road, when you are going to bed, and when you are getting up. So is the main message that you took out of that just this, that we talk about our faith regularly, or is there more to it than that?
Well, I think those times listed there have unique potential for spiritual interaction with our kids.
And okay.
I just even would want to just step back a little bit further. I mean, just the context for that passage is, this is Moses' farewell speech before the Israelites finally enter the promised land. This is his last chance to tell them everything that's important. And just the verse before, it starts with this: love God, your God, with your whole heart. Love him with all that's in you. Love him with all you've got. Write these commandments that I've given you today on your hearts. Okay, so that's how it starts, experiencing real life with God. Then the very next thing, it says, get them inside of you and get them inside of your children. Mm. And that stood out to me that, you know, for a for the Jewish people, I mean, this is a religious nation, and so much of their life revolved around sacrifices and the tabernacle or the temple. It surprised me that it didn't go love God with everything you have, and then it moved to life in the temple. It didn't do that. It says you got to get it with you, and then now let's talk about this in the home. That yeah. that heart then home pattern really jumped out to me. But yeah, then we tried running specifically with those moments. It's talk about them wherever you are, sitting at home. For us, that meant guarding the dinner table. Thankfully, we kind of experienced in our families, you know, that we had that growing up, and we could see that was an important link in keeping us connected. But, we've seen that transition over our lifetime of families eating together to now families sitting and eating supper, watching a TV show together, to now families eating at totally different times, going to their own screen in their own rooms. And we are going to protect that time together.
Hmm. So have you kind of used it as an outline of about strategic times at which you can come together as a family and reflect on things that you, can you kind of give us an overview of your family? How many kids do you have? And
oh, sure. You bet. Yeah, we have three kids. They are all out of the nest now. Our oldest is Bethany. Yeah, she's a nurse. I'm married to a pastor. And they have a little son, Tyrion. And so they've made us grandparents here in the last few years. Then our second daughter, Hannah, she's graduated college, and she just is now into her second year of teaching mid-high. She lives in Mitchell as well, but teaches in a small rural school about a half hour north of us. And then our third child, our youngest, that's Ben, and he's going to college out at Indiana Wesleyan and studying teaching.
Yeah.
Must be a high school teacher and coach.
Mitch and I are raising kids, are behind you yep. in the journey. We're uh-huh. both raising kids. We both have a kid in the early youngest stages of life, and then we've got a kid that's kind of a big kid stage. Have you ever read about or subscribed to the parenting seasons idea that we parent different ways in different seasons of their lives?
Yeah, I totally subscribe to that. And the outline that you shared with me, I like mm-hmm. even better. I've kind of had it framed. You have the protection years, then the preparation years, and then the friendship years. But okay. Your breakdown, I loved.
Okay. Yeah. And I've seen different ones. I've not heard that one before. So protection years would be maybe like up to seven or something like that. Yeah. And then you said preparation years
yes.
would be after that. And then the friendship years. I asked because you mentioned the friendship years in the message that I saw you preach. And so I assumed that you did subscribe to one of those. We do too. I've used a couple different outlines of parenting stages. So the one that I use now is discipline years is 0 to 5, training years is 5 to 12, coaching years is 12 to 18, and then friendship years is 18 plus. And so we both have one in the discipline years and one in the training years.
Do those brackets feel right to you, Dan, yes. with having gone through them all?
Yes.
Or, yep. Yeah.
So, I think that for me, it would be helpful if we can kind of break down this conversation by the different seasons, by the stages of parenting, because I kind of have a couple questions about each season. Actually, I have a million
questions. I have 1,000 questions for you.
Yeah.
So
I have a lot of questions about the first season because that's the one I have the most experience with.
Sure.
But I'm going to try to exit my personal knowledge and ask you questions about the later seasons and pretend like I have experience there when I don't. But
sure.
So talking about the discipline years, we have a life group of a lot of people that are in this season of discipline years, and the wide variety of opinions about how we should discipline our children. We have all kind of determined we're not going to use the word punish because that kind of implies a punitive nature to it that we don't really want to give to it. But,
what do you use instead?
Discipline.
Consequences, discipline.
Yeah, consequences, yeah. So kind of the conversation is, it's kind of the love and logic versus the consequences conversation. Sure. And so different people, I'm curious if you have kind of a model you subscribe to. Do you believe in spanking? Do you believe in just natural consequences? How do you feel about that conversation?
Yeah, sure. So I'm dating myself, and I would, thankfully, while we weren't maybe engaged spiritually, the discipline aspect of parenting was modeled really well for both of us growing up. So that was a huge help. But I would say, you know, we definitely gained a lot from Dr. Dobson and what he put, the Dare to Discipline book out there. Love and Logic wasn't really quite as widely known when we were in those years, but I agree with that. And yeah, one of the biggest questions that comes up is, you know, to spank or not to spank. And there's strong feelings over that. Both Michelle and I received spankings growing up, and I just finished going through Proverbs, and there's at least 5 times in there where it does commend corporal punishment.
Really?
So that just stood out to me. And we didn't do it that often, but we did spank our kids. And some things that I think need to get fed into that in order for that to be healthy and constructive. And I'm just, my dad did such a good job of modeling this, is that if I was spanked, first off, if it was a mistake, then getting a spanking was off the table. I mean, you correct mistakes, you sure. Discipline. The things that might call for it, we call it the 3 Ds, dishonesty, disrespect, disobedience. If their conduct falls into those categories, then it calls for discipline. And if it's extreme, then spanking is on the table. But what my folks did right with that is, generally I had advance warning that this was coming, unless my behavior was very, very much egregious. Also, they modeled a calm spirit when it did come to that. When I got spanked, I knew it wasn't because they were at the end of their rope and they were angry and they were taking out on me. They were doing it calmly because my behavior merited that. And then when the spanking was done, they remained with me until there's that, the shudder, the tears are done, the sigh, there's that closure is brought. And they were there in that moment to assure me of their love. And so when we did spank, we tried to follow that pattern and found it to be healthy for our kids. They haven't come back on us for that yet at this point. And another key thing was when it comes to corporal punishment, like it has to hurt, but you can't harm. And my parents were just, they knew where that line was and didn't cross it. And neither did we with our kids. So it was never the first option, but it was an option on the table.
Yeah, sure. I have a friend who asked me the other day, he was like, do you think Jesus would have spanked? And I thought about it for a minute, and I think the answer is definitely yes. It largely depends on what you think of Jesus and how you think of the way he interacts with people he loves. Sure. And I don't think you can read scripture and come to the conclusion that God does not use pain in order to teach us lessons. I mean, there is obviously lessons we need to learn. And sometimes pain is his megaphone, as C.S. Lewis said, his megaphone to help teach us those lessons. Mm-hmm. And so if pain can help me teach my children a lesson, now, obviously, I don't want to permanently damage them.
No, right.
But I think pain can help them.
If like anytime you ask one if they spank, unless they got a good conviction like Dan, and you've just said, they kind of will be like, I mean, I don't, because you don't want to be looked at as the, like a people, I feel like they assume the worst.
Right. Yeah.
If they hear you spank, they're like, well, you probably fly off the handle. You probably hurt your kids.
Like, you don't have actually, none of those emotions happen.
Right. Yeah. No, actually, it's the last thing on the table. It hurts, but it isn't. I can't remember how Dan, I don't remember how you said it, Dan, but like, harmful. And then we remain with them.
Yeah.
Like, and we finish this thing together. People do tend to assume the worst, I feel like.
We always say that the climax of every spanking is a hug.
Sure.
Like, that's what it's leading toward, a moment of embrace where we come back together and we love each other, as you were talking about. My mom is very passionate about this conversation, and she kind of sees time out as the way a lot of people see spanking. She thinks it's cruel. It's you're dragging out a negative emotion that doesn't need to be dragged out. For her, it's like, let's get this dealt with. Let's not put it off. Let's not wait. Let's deal with what needs to be dealt with, and then reunite and don't take time out of our day with so much negativity by prolonging it. She says, instead, let's deal with it and move on. We love each other and let's move on. So that's helpful to me.
Yeah. You know, I think it's unhealthy to split Jesus from what we see in the Old Testament. And I think we just finished as a church going through the Old Testament prophets. And I don't think it's a stretch to say that was a season where God put Israel over his knee and spanked them. But even when he disciplined them, it was always followed by words of hope and words of assurance as well.
That's really good. You mentioned the passage Deuteronomy 6:7, talking about writing the law on our hearts. I loved the stages that you put there with it, that it starts with the heart. I think this is how you said it. It starts with the heart and then it goes to the home. That keeps us from being a hypocrite. Like it should have affected me before I enforce it on you. That's really helpful to me. Also, the fact that he is talking about the law specifically there. Do you have a strategy in the formation of rules in your house? How do you decide what will be a rule and what won't be a law? I've heard Jordan Peterson talking about having the, I can't remember the words he used, but the minimum necessary rules. It's like, if you have a bunch of frivolous rules, then it takes away from the importance of the more important rules. So have as few as possible. Do you have a strategy in that?
Yeah. Well, I think I would agree to that. The fewer rules, the better. When you talk about things in terms of principles, that allows you to operate a little more broadly. Otherwise, you have to come up with specific rules for every single thing. And I guess I would just maybe add to that what made the application of rules in our family somewhat less, it helped us guard against it being unnecessarily burdensome, is wherever we could, we tried to get the kids' participation in that.
Yeah.
And so I'm thinking about in particular, like when the kids were, so they would have been 6, 9, 12. We made kind of a covenant together as a family about how we were going to keep the Sabbath. And we agreed together that, you know, no, we weren't going to have any devices on for the afternoon and that we weren't going to do this. But when they had a chance to participate in it, it wasn't, we can't do this or mom and dad will be upset. It's we're doing this to preserve something special that we want to experience as a family. Mm.
That is so cool. That gave me chills and a lot of ideas. Like, why do we separate them from this process if we want to have shared values? I like that you talk about it as principles rather than rules. I've always told our kids we have one rule. Our rule is kindness. And so it's very easy to attach any negative action to the statement, was that kind? I mean, it's almost, there are almost no necessary rules that you can't attach that statement to. So that's our rule. But I think what you just said is better than what I'm saying. That's not a rule. That's a principle. And that's a foundational principle. So maybe I should be saying to my kids, what's our one principle rather than what's our one rule? Because that, we can build rules off of that principle. That's good.
Yeah. Do you like when our daughter goes, I said this thing and I don't know if that was good or bad. Like, well, was it kind?
Yeah.
No. Like, okay, well then.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know the answer.
I would just want to add just a little bit to that, because that made me think about something that came across our path early on. I'm very thankful for We went to a seminar by Josh McDowell right when he came out with the book, Right Versus Wrong. And because we knew at the end of the day, our goal is not for our kids to follow rules. Mm. And our goal isn't even just for our kids to live wisely. Our goal is for our kids to know and love God. And so he laid out this concept of, as you disciple your kids, don't settle for precepts. And precepts are those specific rules. You know, thou shalt not lie. And he says, don't even just settle for principles, which go beyond, they're broader. You know, honesty is the best policy. You wouldn't want someone to do that to you. But connect the behavior we expect for them to the character of God. We don't lie, not just because the Ten Commandments say thou shalt not lie. We don't lie because God is honest, because God would never lie to us, because we can count on what he says to be true. So, and all those behavior things, we tried to find the connecting point with the character of God, because he was the ultimate goal in this.
So good.
That's, yeah.
Let's move on to the training years. I've got one kid in the training years, and I'm realizing how much school plays a role in how you parent your kids in this season, and how school is so important in their lives. Do you have a preferred version of school? My older siblings were all homeschooled, so I always say they're weirder than me. I went to Christian schools when I was growing up, and then my kids are in public school, largely because I know the teachers in our local public school. And so I'm confident in them. And so I can trust them to teach my kids. Do you have a preference between schooling methods?
Yeah, I'm not married to any one of them. And we actually tried all three as a family. When the kids were youngest, they were in Christian school, and then we homeschooled for a time, and then they finished the course in public school. And, you know, I guess what we experienced is that the homeschooling certainly, allowed us to cover more ground academically with our kids, but there's some pitfalls to that too, and so some of it just goes to knowing your kids. You know, our most compliant child really struggled in the homeschooling environment because they thrived on academic competition, and so the other two settings were better. And so I think. All three of those options are legit. It's about knowing what you can do best as a family, knowing how your kids are wired, what's going to suit them, and then also overall just praying about what is God leading you to, and being aware of the pitfalls so you can avoid them. Mm.
That's cool. You mentioned earlier the idea of getting kids involved in the creation of principles or family decisions. What about getting them involved in making the home, in chores and this type of thing? We have some friends of ours that, man, the kids do everything. I'm like, man, you live a cush life, because it sounds like your kids do all of it.
Your kids are only three?
Yeah. You will clean them.
Yeah.
My mom went the other direction with it. She always said, they're going to have plenty of time when they're older to do chores around the house. I'll let them wait until they're out of the house, which I think there's definitely some negatives to that. But do you lean one way or the other in terms of having kids help out around the house?
Yeah, I do think, you know, start as early as possible. And just being sensitive to at that point where you are exasperating them, you do need to pull back. You want your kids to come home. You want your kids to want to come home.
Wow.
And, but, you know, part of this is teaching them that there is joy in work. And part of what it means to be made in the image of God is he made us wired to handle responsibility. And that's a privilege. That's an honor. God counts on humanity on a level totally different than any other creature in creation. And so let's start learning how to handle that well at an early age. It's not about getting something out of them. It's not making them pay for the food we put on the table. It's about increasing their capacity.
Yeah. What about entrusting them with things? I didn't know whether to put this next question under the coaching years or under the training years, because of the nature of the question. I'm curious about when we should allow our kids to have a cell phone, or when we should allow them to have social media. My kid's in second grade and he already has friends with his cell phone. And so I'm blown away how quickly we're having to answer this question. But do you lean one way or the other in allowing those things?
Yeah. And I wish that I wish this was an area maybe we could get a do-over. We were just, kind of ahead of the curve where this really wasn't an issue. We just missed some of this. But we've had a lot of discussions now that our kids are out of the house and they wished we would have put more in place. Mm. So, I think if we had to do it over, I mean, it seems functionally a kid should probably have a phone by the time they're in mid-high. Whether that's a smartphone or a dumb phone, is debatable with, but I certainly would try to make sure those apps are limited. And then I do think it's good for kids to get some experience with things while they're still under your roof. So I would certainly recommend, maybe 16, that age mm-hmm. of social media, where they can create those accounts, as a parent. I mean, it needs to be said at the beginning, you get all the passwords. There's nothing they get to hide from you. Well, what our kids have come back on is, they now wished we would have had a set hour at night where 9 o'clock, all of the family phones go to one spot and they stay there till the next day. Mm. And I recently was just listening to John Mark Comer talk about digital asceticism. Mm. And he shared some of the digital rules of life that one of his staff members has for his family. And they were fantastic. I wished I could go back. And I think those would be the things that we run with. Mm.
That's so helpful. And I appreciate the practical and moderate position there, because I feel like so many people want to swing the pendulum one way or the other on this conversation. But the reality is the iPhone and other social media programs are really giving parents more and more control and allowing for different ages to have different access. And I am a huge fan. That's kind of the reason why I like the words training season and coaching season, mm-hmm. because we're trying to give them experiences while they're in our homes so that they can have experiences that we can teach them through. If they have no experiences, then it's kind of difficult to just teach them. It's like when you're going to school when you're younger, it all just flies over your head because you don't have any life experiences to apply the things you're learning to. But I went back to school later in life and I'm like, whoa, I just absorbed so much more because there's actual things in my life that I can apply these lessons mm-hmm. to. So I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah.
In my, let's go to the coaching years. In my teenage years, I worked a ton. Always had a job, worked too many hours. And I look around the teenagers here at the church and I'm blown away how many of them are going to school full time. They're playing sports. Mm-hmm. And they've got jobs. I'm like, they go nonstop. I don't know if that's everywhere, but it's definitely in our community where it feels like the teenagers are just doing everything and working too. I know the popular thing to do is talk about how lazy they are, but they sure don't look lazy to me with all of what they're doing in their lives. Do you have a preference and should the teenager work outside the home or about how much sports they should play or things like that?
Yeah. And I'm not being noncommittal here, but so much of it just depends on the kid and their capacity and their interest. I would say though, the job is less important than the kids knowing how to work. And that sure. would be the primary thing is do our kids know how to work? And a job can be a good tool for that, but extracurricular activities can be good tools for that as well. And I know, and it calls for coaching on both ends because I on one end, I know kids that are just like, they're doing homework till 10:30 and they're exhausted and they feel this pressure. But, I don't see many, teens who know how to refill the tank in a healthy way or know how to experience solitude and be okay with it. And so, I think there's even coaching for how to use the downtime. As a parent, I want to make sure that they have both. They have those seasons, they're getting after it, they're working hard. Whether they get paid or not immediately by that is secondary for me, but do they know how to work? But I also want to know, do they know how to recreate in a healthy, positive way? And can they just be still before the Lord? And that's where you get your grounded sense of identity. And so that protects you against extreme laziness and workaholism.
Yeah, sure. Which I feel like a lot of adults today struggle with that part too. I liked when you mentioned that being made in the image of God, that we were made to work. So there's that. And we were also made to, for the Sabbath, to rest. So like part of coaching, right? I guess you would say, or you kind of just said, but for my simpleton brain would be to coach both those things, like coach your kids what the work is for or how to work, and also coach your kid in how to rest, right? Yeah. Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Let them watch you do it, I guess, is what I heard you say.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had two very different kinds of coaches playing sports growing up. And there was the coach who's, practically out on the court with you the whole time, like involved in every little decision and calling every single play. I was a point guard in basketball and had another coach who was like, nope, you're calling the plays. It's all up to you. You make the decisions. And so we call it the coaching years, but there's a lot of leeway in how involved you are in the coaching process. We have a lot of parents in our church right now that have kids who are toying with the LGBTQ conversation, and the parents are asking, how much should I interfere and how much should I pull the reins and panic in this season? And so do you lean in these coaching years, do you lean more towards the you should be actively involved in their decisions, or more standing back and being there to help them when they ask for help?
Yeah, I probably favor engagement over disengagement, but how you engage matters. So the older they get in that coaching phase, when you engage, it does have to become more permission-based. Mm. It can't be, I'm going to sit you down and I'm going to tell you this. It's like, hey, here, I have some concerns on my heart and here's some things I know to be true. Can I share this with you? And so I would say be as engaged as you can, but you kind of got to give them an out, and you have to ask for their permission in order to engage as they get in the final point of those coaching years.
Hmm. Yeah. That's helpful. So, let's move on to the, friendship years. And really kind of what I want to spend the rest of our time talking about is how we hand off our faith to our kids so that not only are we their friends, which is a primary objective in the previous phases, that we get to the point where we can be friends. But I also want to have the conversation where, how do we become like-minded friends? Like, I have some friends that I don't agree on a lot of the core principles of life. Like, I don't want to just be my friend's kid or my kid's friends when they're older. I want them to be like-minded in our Christian mission and our passion for God. So could you kind of talk about how generally generations hand off their beliefs and their ideas to the next generation?
Yeah. Well, just, I'm so thankful early on. In fact, we hadn't really started parenting yet. Michelle was expecting Bethany, but we were still, we were attending church in Brookings at a Wesleyan church there. And Pastor Tim Purcell had just come back from his master's work and was studying this phenomena, so this is going 25 years ago, the church is really starting to get alarmed by how few young adults were returning to the church once they'd graduated high school, once they'd got out from, underneath mom and dad's roof. And what he shared, what he found in that, he says, there tends to be this generational pattern that happens. You have this first generation where they personally encounter God. And they make the decision to trust him because they love him. And that's the relationship generation. And when they go to church, they go to church because they want to. They want to get to know God better. If you're not careful, there tends to be some drop off to the generation that follows. And you move from being the religion or the relationship generation to becoming the religion generation, where you go to church because you really didn't have a choice growing up. And that's just what we do as a family, or we go to church because if we don't, then grandma cries and I don't want the guilt trip.
Yeah. Right? Don't want grandma to cry.
No,
I see it.
No. And then if it falls to that, then it tends to fall off to rebellion in the next generation, because they look at the religion generation and go, that's hypocrisy. That's emptiness. Forget that. And they check out. That hit us like a ton of bricks, because as he was even talking about that, Michelle and I looked back over our families. And as we looked at the generations, we saw that pattern at work. And for the most part, we were part of the rebellion generation. And would it continue that way had God not just intervened and pursued us? And we're like, no, we don't want there to be drop off. Again, we want our kids to go further in their faith than we did, because hopefully they've gotten a head start on that. And so that really led to us becoming intentional, knowing we cannot cram this into them. We cannot force them. But you know, that going back to that passage from Deuteronomy 6, that does describe a spiritual full court press in a winsome way. And that discussion really lit a fire in us to try to engage our kids spiritually that way.
Yeah, that's really helpful. We've made handing our faith off to our children a primary objective in our parenting. And we just saw a study that said that, so 75% of kids who grew up in the church end up leaving the church, but 25% didn't. And Kidman Science did a study of the 25%, and they researched what kept the 25% from leaving the church. And they found five common traits in the families where the kids did not leave the church. One is they ate dinner 5 to 7 times a week as a family. Two is they served with their family in a faith-based ministry. Three is they had at least one significant spiritual experience in the home during the week. Four was they were entrusted with significant responsibilities in a ministry at a young age. And five is they had at least one adult in their lives other than their parent who believed the same thing as their parents. So kind of a spiritual mentor outside of the home. And something I'm seeing a commonality in a lot of what you're saying is to not just say what we believe, not just claim a religion, but to authentically live it out. That we have to set the example, and we have to, it's the heart thing before the home thing. Like, we have to live it out so that our kids will eventually live it out. And I think all five of those things you could just say would come naturally if you decide you're going to live out your faith. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Wow. That is so powerful what, you know, those studies showed. And I would agree so strongly with each of them. Mm-hmm. And it's not like we made the decision this was going to be our strategy. This was just part of this is how we engage in church. Serving is part of that. And so our kids were serving early. And I'll tell you that there was a very difficult season for us in our parenting as we entered the coaching years with our two youngest. And that's when we moved from Sturgis to Mitchell. Mm. And Hannah was going to be a junior that year. Ben was going to be an eighth grader. They were not happy about the move at all. And so there was a period where they were very angry with us. Thankfully they like just didn't go off the rails in rebellion. They're just not inclined that way. However, they gave us little to no space to influence them directly. But one of the things I know that kept their heart soft for the Lord was serving. And both of them happened to serve in kids ministry, and them getting to experience serving alongside their peers, serving alongside other older followers of Christ, and getting to experience being a hero to these little kids. That was so significant in keeping their heart still linked to God in the middle of it.
Yeah. Were they mad because they were going to miss out on the rally, or what was so?
When you said that there was a difficult part of parenting, I was like, well, you lived in Sturgis, so I bet it was Sturgis like, rally week.
Right. Like that's our vacation week.
Yeah. No, that wasn't quite it, but oh man, that was
no, I'm sure not.
That was certainly one of the most difficult things to navigate. Just even for me emotionally. Oh, that was that was tough. And that's impacted like what we do ministry wise here at the church is you know, I would say 2 decades ago, the model of youth ministry, from what I observed, seemed to be, okay, you sit there and we're going to teach you this. And sit there Because you need to know this before you go to college, and you need to know this because this aspect of your faith is good. No, you just sit there because we've got more truth to cram into your head. And they just sat there. And what that seemed to produce more was either people who checked out or people who had a consumeristic mindset. Feed me. And so we need to be intentional in our teaching of our youth. But by the time they're sophomores and they're getting good instruction on Wednesday night, they don't need another Bible study on Sunday morning. And so we kind of kick them out of what we have planned for our youth Sunday morning. And they are to find different ways to serve within the church. Mm. And it's so important that they experience prior to leaving home, they have a part to play in the church. Mm. And if that happens, then no wonder that's a major factor in kids retaining their faith.
Yeah. We talk often about getting kids involved in ministry early and often. Actually, a lot of our best children's ministry volunteers are teenagers.
Yes.
I try to get as many teenagers. I'm hounding Mitch all the time. How many more teenagers can we get up on the stage to lead worship? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the earlier we can get them involved, I want to err on the side of too early. I want to get them involved largely because of my testimony. I feel like I am who I am today because my senior year of high school, my pastor came and said, "Would you be our worship pastor?" And I'm like,
"Oh,
what?" Sure. And but that kind of trial by fire got me in there and got me passionate about it. I started fighting the fight and couldn't stop. And so I want to get people and kids involved as early as I possibly can.
Yeah. 10-4.
Is there anything in this conversation that we have underemphasized or any ideas that we've missed that you would want to encourage parents with or leave us with today?
Well, I think, you mentioned those five things that helped a child continue in their faith as they became adults. And you mentioned they had at least one adult in their lives other than their parents who believed the same thing as their parents. Hmm. That building other trusted voices into your kid's life is so crucial. It's not something I recognized the importance of until we were on the other side of it. But thankfully, one of the things God helped us do well was friendship with other families in the church. Mm-hmm. And we did things with them as a family. So our kids interacted a lot with our friends and came to see them as like adopted aunts and uncles, and they were part of birthday celebrations, that kind of thing. And then when we hit that phase where our youngest, where they were upset with us and they didn't want to hear it from us, I can't tell you what it meant to have other trusted voices around them speaking into their lives. I think that gets missed. I've seen too many Christian families who are so fearful of any influence outside of their family that they overprotect their kids. And typically then what happens is the kids, even if they don't rebel while they're under the roof, the moment they're free, you know, they bolt.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the I don't think the church does a good enough job about realizing this is our part to play in helping parents raise kids, is providing other trusted voices.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of parents lament the fact that their kids went off and heard something from someone else and come home to their parents and say, "Hey, I learned this thing." And the parents like, "I've been telling you that for years."
Oh yeah. But
we will hear it from other people outside of our home because we begin to learn and we lose value in the wisdom that we hear from our parents. We see that in the church. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'll come to our church and I'll say, "I really feel like we should do this thing." And everybody's like, "I don't know, that sounds risky." Or if I hire an expert who comes out and says we should do that exact same thing,
I'm on board.
Because somebody else, some expert, somebody we paid came to the same conclusion. And so, yeah, now we'll go for it. But they need to hear what we taught echoed from somebody else many times it'll be absorbed.
Yeah, that's a good argument for being in. Do you guys have like a life group type ministry or?
Yes.
I mean, that's a great argument right there to get your kids around believers and hear you guys have conversations. Someone who's not your parent believes the same thing that your parents believe. And yeah,
we've been having a hard time in our life group recently with the older kids fighting. I mean, they're all in those training years, so that's just kind of what they do, but, boys fighting. And so in our last life group meeting, we sat all the training years kids down, and we as an entire life group taught a lesson to our sons and daughters about how we treat each other and how we respect one another. And the point was exactly what we were talking about. I want Lincoln to hear from Nate.
Exactly right.
Him saying what I would have said anyway, but sure. I think he's more likely to hear from Nate and kind of the same thing. So we kind of parented together as a life group.
Yeah, as a week. Kid, you're just thinking, wait a second.
Dave.
You guys all believe this?
Yeah. Every once in a while, my kid will come home from school and he'll say, did you know so-and-so believes in God? Or did you know so-and-so? And when he hears that one of his friends or one of his friends' parents agree with us on what we believe, it's like, I thought we were alone. I thought we were isolated in this idea. And so it's very exciting for him when he hears that.
Very cool.
Dan, thank you so much for this. This has been awesome. Very helpful for me and helping us put language to and strategize how we're all doing this. We have a lot of people that are walking this difficult, hard journey of trying to learn how to be parents. And it's helpful for us to hear from those who have done it already.
Right.
And have done it in such a way that their kids did not run away once they went away to college is helpful. So.
No, you're welcome. There's nothing I'm more passionate about. There's nothing that means more to me than enjoying shared faith, partnership in the gospel, and lifelong friendship with our kids. So I hope this helps.
Amen.
Awesome. Good stuff.
Thanks.
Yes. If you're going through this thing called parenthood, don't do it alone. Once again, get inside of a church, to be in a community that is like-minded and there to support you and help you out. Cannot recommend enough.
Absolutely.
So thank you for joining. I hope that conversation was helpful and useful and I don't know, got some gears turning.
Yeah.
Potentially.
That's right.
Would you please hit the like button again? Just one more time. We'll say it. Subscribe to the channel so that this kind of stuff can come your way. Share it. That also helps. And if you didn't like it, hit the thumbs down twice just for good measure to know that it counts.
Absolutely.
Right.
And as you go, know that Jesus loves you unconditionally and he died to give you new life.